You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
So you're waiting for that moment, that thing that you ordered is coming, and then you hear the truck rumble down the street, and then the familiar beeping as the, I don't know why they beep, maybe it's like panic, like hurry up, deliver this product, this package, and it's beeping, and then you hear the door open, you're like, yes, this is for you, and then they go to your next door neighbor's house, and it's really disappointing, but I mean, we're kind of like, and maybe it's generational as well, but we're totally addicted to online ordering. You can just find stuff that probably is a bunch of junk, and sometimes it's cheap. Sort of like Ollie's, but, you know, you never know what you get at Ollie's. But how many of you have ever, go ahead and turn the house lights on, have you ever ordered something online? All right, yeah, so it looks like most of you could, because if you don't do that, this has no context, and it makes absolutely no sense as to what I'm explaining. Just out of curiosity, how many of you have gotten packages delivered by the new blue delivery people? Anybody seen them? And they have they've been labeling their vans, they say, delivery driver. Like, it almost feels like it should say, this is not a sus van that has no windows. There's nothing illegal going on in the back, but it just says delivery driver. And if you're old enough to remember the A-Team, that was a classic thing that they would always do. They'd, like, throw a magnet on the side of their car and be like, delivery driver. Oh, it's on the side of the car. It must be official. Anyway, but that's not my point. We're going to talk about delivery today and how packages work. And to do that, because there's no ignition all month long, I'm going to need the ignition kids that have finished kindergarten through fifth grade to please join me here up on stage. So if you're in ignition, please join me up on stage. I'm looking at you, and you, and you two, and you. Come on, give it up to them. Yeah. Yeah, there's more back there. We got some back there. All right, you're going to come up on stage here. Come on, boys. Yeah, all right. All right, now, I needed to count again, and I had a really hard time doing that last week. So this is 3, and this is 4. It's 7 again. Okay, so here's the deal. What I need you guys to do, are you with me here? I need you guys to go over and each of you grab 3 boxes from that stack of delivery boxes. There's nothing in them, so you're good. And they're all going to be labeled because they're being reused from Family Hack Hunt. Do you guys remember that a long time ago? So get 3 boxes, come on back out here. Like, yeah, this is not part of the competition. It's not to see how well you can carry boxes. Oh, watch your head. Okay. All right, yeah. That's good. That'll work. All right. Okay, so here's the deal. What I need you guys to do, let me help you out here. Why don't you do that and that and then carry it like that. There you go. All right, excellent. Okay, so what I'm going to need you guys to do, oh, you dropped your box. That's it. Get out. No. There are counting this box, which doesn't count. But you each have 3 boxes, which is 21 total boxes, okay? What you guys are going to need to do is you're going to work together, and you're going to make the biggest tower with these boxes that you can. But here's a couple of rules. Number one, you're the only one that can put your 3 boxes on there. So no one can take them and just start stacking it for you. You guys can direct traffic and say, hey, why don't you put your box next or something like that. So that's rule number one. You have to do your 3 boxes. We're going to see how tall it can get. So if it falls over, you got to start over. And I will tell you, I practiced this earlier this week, or last week, I guess it was technically, and they will not stack straight up. You cannot stack them straight up. They will fall over. So I'll just tell you that right now. So does that make sense? You're going to see how tall I get. So maybe you could try it out. If they fall over, grab 3 boxes, and we'll try a different way. You with me? Does that make sense? All right. And I even have a stepladder over there in case we need to reach the top. So I don't know how tall you're going to get, but, you know, we've got that there. And there's also a ladder you can climb and hang down from the ceiling if you need to. So we've probably got some rope that we can do that. Anybody have some rope if we need to tie anyone from the ceiling? I think Michaela wants to be tied from the ceiling. I feel that. I'm feeling that in your face. Okay, so you guys understand what we're going to do? So you're going to need it. You don't understand what you're going to do?
Yeah, I do.
You do want to hang from the ceiling?
No.
He does, yeah. All right. So All right, you understand that? So you're going to need to work together. Only you can put your three boxes in the stack, so you guys are going to need to talk to see how high you make it. If it falls over, we'll try again, and we'll see until we can get kind of a pretty good stack to stay and how much time I'm planning on killing with this particular game. All right, so we've got some music here, this time planned ahead for this building up of boxes. So go. Only, yeah, only your own box. You can only move your boxes. You know it's not going to work, so try something. Yeah. Take your boxes off. Yeah. Okay, so here we are again. Go! Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, look at that. Want to build evenly there, but I'm. All right. Now, Roxy is there. Can you get the camera out again? I think you guys need to get in front of your tower, and we're going to take a picture here. Don't knock it over. All right. Everybody there? Everybody see her? Can you see everybody? Okay, don't push anybody off the stage. All right. Come on, Mom. Get off my case. All right, well... That is great. That's really impressive. I don't think I would have done it that way, but I know you want to do it. But where's the guitar? Okay, they're back there. Just out of curiosity. So, you want to knock it over? Yeah. You want? All right. Why don't you, maybe on three, but don't push people. We're just going to push them that way. So if it hits you in the eye, watch out, Marley. Ready? Don't push. Like, I don't like the way you've got your arm around him. I don't want to. There goes Ezra. Okay. All right. You can get in. Okay, you don't want to? All right. You're going to. Get in there somewhere. Yeah. All right. Ready? On three. One, two, three. Okay. Excellent. All right. So I want you guys to sit on the stage because I want to talk to you again. So I have some questions for you. If I can find my notes. Where did I put my notes? Okay. Excellent. Don't worry. Your time will come too. So I have some questions for you. I'll sit here because I felt like last time you were like looking up at me. It was just kind of weird. And they can hear me. Oh, these boots are awesome with shorts. I love it. All right. So. Have you guys, I know I asked this question a second, have you guys ever ordered anything online or your parents ordered something for you? Yeah? Yeah. What did you get? A hero costume online. Why did you get that? For next week. Why? What's next week? It's We Need a Hero Sunday. You're right. What a great, I did not, I'll pay you later. All right. So any, what else? What else did you guys order? What, Paisley? Oh, bedroom net for your stuffed animals. I didn't know if there was mosquitoes or something. So you could just close a window. But all right, so a bedroom net. What else? What else have you guys gotten from an order online? What's that? All right, Under Armour shorts. Do you guys get anything for Christmas online or birthdays? Most of your stuff, yeah? All right. Is there ever anything that you, what was your favorite thing that you've ever gotten that probably came from an online order? You don't know? None of your favorite things? Your sister? Wait, your sister came online? No. Oh, she probably does more online shopping than you. Yeah, you guys aren't quite there, but maybe your parents. So let me ask you. So think of like the favorite thing that you got for maybe your birthday or Christmas. And let's say that it came online, right? So you ordered it online. Where did my box go? It's up there. And how does it work, right? You order it or your parents order it. And then somewhere, somebody takes the package and puts it in a box and then gives it to the delivery driver, right? And what's the job of the delivery driver? To deliver. Okay, so where do they take it? From where to where? To the house. Whose house? Your house. Okay, okay. So, and you probably see, like, there's people in blue, and you've got the brown guys, and then there's, like, the what are they, purple and orange? Is that what the other ones are? And then there's the United States Postal Service. So all these people deliver stuff. But just out of curiosity, say you ordered your favorite thing, right? And I'm the delivery driver, and so I go to the place where they get the order, and they give me this box. And say I take the box, and I go, wow. They gave me this box. If they gave it to me, that means it must be for me, right? And so instead of delivering it to your house, I just take it to my house because somebody gave me the box. So clearly, if they gave it to me, it belongs to me. And you go to my house, and I've got all sorts of boxes because people keep giving me boxes, and I keep taking them because they belong to me. How would you feel about that? What? Oh, it's stealing. Okay, yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem. Would you be okay with that? Would you be like, where's your package? Why didn't it arrive? No, because does the package belong to the delivery person?
No.
No, this isn't hard, right? No, it doesn't belong to them. If they took it, I mean, definitely they would probably lose their job. But yeah, it's yours, and they're just the person that's taking it from one place to giving it to you. And today we're going to talk about a hero. And she actually was given a package that most people would probably have kept for themselves. But she realized that it belonged to God. And so she gave it to him. And so today we're going to talk about Hannah. So you guys, thank you for building the stack, the tower here. You guys can go have a seat. And you can give it up, everybody, for them. Thank you for your help. Don't trip on your way through. But today we're talking about Hannah. And Hannah. Hannah. And what do we know about Hannah? Hannah was awestruck by a life of surrender. Hannah is one of the heroes that we're looking at in this third version of the Heroes series. This is Heroes Are Back. And I think Hannah, if I do the math right, would be 8 and 2 is 16 and 4 is 20 and 3 is 23, 24. Yeah, so this is the 23rd hero. And then next week we wrap up with our 24th hero over the last 3 years or three versions of the series. But Hannah, she was awestruck by a life of surrender. And we're going to look at her story, and you're going to see that God gave her something, again, a package that most of us would be tempted to keep. And frankly, most of us would say, that's okay. That's not a problem because, you know, God gave it to her. And so she gets to keep it. And so I want to talk about this idea of package. And how many of you ever have used the tracking information when you get a, you know, here's the putting that tracking number. And, you know, once upon a time, if you're of a certain age, say you're turning 50 this year, you used to have to like write that number down and then call and then push that number in. And then inevitably after all, what is that, like 70 numbers, by like number 30, you've gotten it wrong, and then it'll say nothing. And you have to try it again. It was crazy. Now you can just cut and paste, drop it in, or even click, and they give you the tracking information. But I want to talk about entering the tracking information and looking at her story and her delivery and how Hannah handled this. First of all, it's very important, and I'm gonna have some words here that are in blue. And again, we're trying to keep everybody interested. It is clearly summer vacation time, which is why we slow things down. It's also raining, and something about rain keeps people from church. Like, it's raining out. I don't want to get wet. It can be snowing 13 inches out there, and we'll be fine. But rain, like, scatters everyone. But for everyone that is here, and if you're watching online, there's, like, millions of people in this room. It is packed. Sorry for all the tightness. Sorry for all of you that are standing in the back. But with these words in blue, I'm going to need everybody to kind of yell them out because, you know, sometimes, you know, an older guy teaching a whole bunch of people for a long time isn't as entertaining for people that are probably in elementary school. So each of these words that are in blue, we're going to say out loud together as we go through it, and just to keep us on track. So the first thing that we're going to see here is that Hannah had
nothing.
Okay, so that's what we're doing. That was a good practice. So just stick in with me again, everybody. Everybody with me? All right? Here we go. Hannah had very good. Hannah had nothing. And it's so, so important to understand this as she starts her story. And we're going to be looking at basically all we know about the life of Hannah. And what is crazy cool, as we'll see in a little bit, is that her story is such a huge part of our faith and our relationship with Jesus. So we see that, this is what we read. And if you've got the YouVersion notes there, hopefully you got the notification. We're doing that from, you know, if you're following MC3 on YouVersion, you should get a notification at 9:30 every Sunday with the notes. But I am reading selected parts, but in the notes you have the entire passage. So that you can follow along, you can read it at home, as long as you click Save Event at the top of your notes. Make sure you hit Save Event, otherwise in a week those notes won't be there anymore. So, this story comes from 1 Samuel chapter 1, and we're going to talk about this guy Samuel in a moment, but it comes from 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel. But 1 Samuel chapter 1, in verses 1 to 8, it picks up here, part of the story, it says, Elkanah, this man, had two wives. And we're going to go, what is that all about? We're not going to talk about that right now. What? Nobody knows. There's reasons for that. But anyway, he had two wives, Hannah and Penina. Now, Penina had children, but Hannah did not. Penina? Okay. Banana. Hannah, banana. Mina. Hannah, funny. Okay. All right. So, Penina had children. Hannah did not. And so, what you need to understand right away is that children were like, and this is going to sound really bad, but children were like currency to Old Testament Jewish people. Like, they represented, like, value, they represented blessing from God. And so, you know, today you might talk about how many houses you own or, you know, how many private jets you have or things like that to talk about how valuable are. In Old Testament biblical times, it would be, Jewish times, it would be how many kids you have. They were a symbol of God's blessing, at least according to how they understood culture. And so you've got this woman, Hannah, who does not have kids. And yet this other woman has had children. And this Penina, she wasn't great. And so we read a little bit later that Penina would taunt Hannah and make fun of her because the Lord had kept her from having children. Like, not cool, Penina. Maybe that's why your name's so weird and hard to pronounce. Like, you taunt Hannah because she didn't have any children. And it says year after year, it was the same. Penina would taunt Hannah as they went to the tabernacle, because every year a good Jewish person, a good biblical, you know, Israelite, would go to the tabernacle to offer their annual sacrifices. And at this time, it was a tabernacle, which was the temporary tent, but it was set up in a place called Shiloh. So the tabernacle was permanently set up in Shiloh, and eventually David, as we talked about last week, David's son Solomon builds the official temple in Jerusalem. So anyway, they would go there, and every time they would go, every year, because I guess maybe they stayed in separate houses, I don't know. But every year they would join together with Elkanah and go to worship God. And Penina would make fun of Hannah. And it said that each time Hannah would be reduced to tears and would not even eat. So, like, it was bad. It wasn't just that she didn't have kids and people would look at her that way. Everybody was making fun of her for it. Everyone was taunting her about it. Like, look at you, loser. You don't even have kids. And And that was hard. So you need to understand, like, there isn't a, like, she had some kids, or she had kids, but she didn't really like them, you know. She had nothing, and she was mocked for it. She was taunted for it. And so the story goes on, as we'll see, is that this happened for years, of course. Remember that. This wasn't just like a one-time occasion. This was every year. Like, here we go. I've got to go, and Penina and her weird name is going to taunt me. So the story goes on, and we've got, first of all, Hannah had... All right, let's try that again. Hannah had... All right, very good. And then the second thing we see is that Hannah got...
something.
Good. Hannah got something. So what did Hannah get? Well, let's continue on in 1 Samuel, verses 9 through 20. And again, I'm reading selected parts of that. It says, once after a sacrificial meal at Shiloh. And so, again, that means that they were at Shiloh, which is where the tabernacle was kind of... it was like a permanent tent set up there. Hannah got up and went to pray. Now, Eli, the priest, and we'll hear more about Eli in a little bit. The priest was sitting in his customary place beside the entrance of the tabernacle. So he's the one, the priest that handles, that's basically the worship leader for the Jewish people at the tabernacle. And it said Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly. And the phrase that is used here, like, it literally means violent. Like, she is violently crying. She is just in that much hurt. And she's crying bitterly as she prayed to the Lord. And then she made this vow. And here's the thing about this vow. Like, if you know the story of Hannah, she's a little more of an obscure character. But, like, this is a vow that a lot of people make. This is one of those, I'm going to make this promise, but I'm never actually planning to keep it promise. You know, kind of that, like, God, I know I didn't study for this test, but I promise that if you can get me an A on this test, that next week I'm going to volunteer to serve in Ignition. Next week I'm going to go to church. Next week I'm going to give more. You know, God, get me out of this situation. Like, God, I know that I had this party and I'm, you know, 19. I'm not old enough to drink and I had this party at my house. And God, I know my parents are on their way home. Can you please make it, God, that they don't find out about this party? And I promise that, you know, I will just go serve and become a pastor and never get married. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about? Like, and you probably have made these promises, but nobody ever intends to keep them. And Hannah, after all this torment, after just being rejected for not having kids, Hannah makes this vow. She makes this promise. She says, O Lord of heaven's army, if you look upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son, then I will give him back to you. He will be yours for his entire lifetime. So she makes this promise and says, God, give me a baby, give me a son, and I promise, God, I will give him back to you and he will serve you his entire lifetime. And, like, I don't know. Again, is she for real? Well, we'll find out in a little bit. But, and I guess if we're calling her a hero, she probably is. But what a commitment, what a promise. And I think people would say, why would you ever make that kind of a promise? But you need to understand just the depth of hurt that she's dealing with. And also, and we'll get to this a little bit later, but why she was awestruck. And why, you know, we said she's awestruck by a life of surrender. Because she recognized that God is so much bigger than even providing a child. And so she says, as a sign that he has been dedicated to the Lord, his hair will never be cut. And I don't know if you're aware of Samson, but Samson was one of the judges. We actually did a series called Spiral Bound, talking about the judges a number of years ago. And there was a vow. It was called the Nazarite Vow. And it was a way that you showed people that you were dedicating your life to God. And it meant that you didn't touch a dead body, you never drank alcohol or wine, and you didn't cut your hair. Because all three of those things tie together somehow. Not cutting your hair, not drinking wine, and not touching dead people. And it was just a sign to people that you were dedicated to God. And so she's basically saying that same thing that Samson did. And if you know the story of Samson, his power was in his hair because he was dedicated to God. When he allowed someone to cut his hair, he lost his power, but it wasn't about his hair. It was about his dedication to God that he actually lost. So anyway, that's why she said his hair is never going to be cut. So she says, if you give me a son, I promise that I will dedicate him to you. He will serve you for his entire life. And then it goes on a little bit later in the passage. She says, the entire family got up the next morning and went to worship the Lord once more. So this is after the meal. They spent the night there at the tabernacle. They get up. They worship God once more. And then it says, then they turn home to Ramah. which is where they're from. When Elkanah slept with Hannah, the Lord remembered her plea, and in due time she gave birth to a son. So she prays to God, gives this crazy vow, and God answers her and gives her a son. And so she's pregnant. She said she named him Samuel when he was born. And for she said, for I asked the Lord for him. The word Shemuel, which is the Hebrew phrase, it actually sounds like I asked the Lord. So she names him Samuel, which, by the way, El, if you see El, that's Elohim, or El is the word for God. So any word, any name that has El in it is referring to God. So she names him Samuel because God gave him to her. And so she's made this promise, this vow, that she will give him to God. And I don't know, I mean, I'm sure, well, no. No, I think we can say by what we're seeing here, she was thrilled that God provided this son for her. And I don't think, unlike us, maybe we'd be like, oh, crap. Like, now I have to keep this vow. What am I going to do? How can I get out of it? Like, I think that's kind of the classic, like, all right, I passed this test. I don't really want to become a pastor. They're really weird. And we kind of have these moments of like, well, it didn't really, you know, maybe that didn't count the same way. Like, but that is not how Hannah responded. So just to recap where we are so far, everyone together. Hannah had. Now Hannah got. And that something was her son, Samuel. And then continuing on, we see that Hannah gave.
Everything.
Hannah gave everything. And this is where, like, I think the rest of us be like, what in the world? Why would you do this, Hannah? Why would you do this? And the passage continues in verses 21 to 28, the first part. It says, Hannah told her husband, she says, wait until the boy is weaned. Then she says, one part I didn't say at the beginning of verse 21. It's the next year. They're getting ready to go back to the tabernacle to worship, to offer their annual sacrifice. And she says to her husband, wait until the boy is weaned. Then I will take him to the tabernacle and leave him there with the Lord permanently. So she is actually honoring her commitment. And so this boy is toddler. I mean, I don't know what how they nursed kids at that age, you know, back in those days. But when he was weaned, he's probably a toddler. Hannah took him to the tabernacle in Shiloh, and they brought along a 3-year-old bull for the sacrifice and a basket of flour and some wine. And all this was part of the worship. There were different types of sacrifices that you would do at the tabernacle. And it says, after sacrificing the bull, they brought the boy to Eli. And one of the things we skipped over is that when Eli heard her praying to God, he assumed she was drunk because she was praying so violently. And she's like, no, I'm not drunk. I just really feel that God could do this for me. And so she says to Eli, hey, do you remember me, sir? She says, I am the very woman who had stood here several years ago praying to the Lord. I asked the Lord to give me this boy, and he has granted my request. So Eli, we talked about in the Hero's Return series, we did 1 week about Samuel, and we did 1 week about Eli, who actually we find out later is a villain. And you can find that on our website, but that's where you can pick up on their stories. But it might sound weird. Like, why is she just like, is this like, you know, Chris comes down to get the mail and there's a baby, you know, in a bassinet sitting on our porch, like on the front door here. Like, is that like, that's not, that seems like what's going on here, but it was not unusual for the priests to help care for, you know, for orphan children or things like that. Like it wasn't like they had an orphanage, but it wasn't an unusual thing. And people would be raised in the temple, and even the Levite family, there were the descendants of Levi. They were the ones that were responsible for the care of the tabernacle and temple. So they would be raising these boys as well, these people to serve in the tabernacle. So it's not that weird. It's not like she's just abandoning him. But she says, now I am giving him, this boy Samuel, to the Lord, and he will belong to the Lord his whole life. So she has nothing. She has no anything. She prays to God and says, God, if you give me a son, I promise I will dedicate him to you. And that's, again, where most of us stop. And I know Kendra already mentioned it in her prayer, and we're going to come back to this later. Everything that we have is from God. Everything that you and I have is a gift from God. And so she had this son. God provides this son for her, and she gave him to God. And my question to you, and frankly to me, You know, are you trustworthy enough to follow through on a promise, even if it hurts? Because I'm sure Hannah wasn't like, yay, I get to not be with my son until next year. Because she did get to see him every year, because she would go back to worship at the tabernacle. We'll come back to that in a little bit. But to surrender her son to God and say, God, this is from you. And so I promised you, and I'm giving him back to you. And that's huge, because not all, I think everybody would be like, no, this is my son, and he's staying at my house with me because of the my. And she recognized, like, no, this is God's son, and I guess I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. So, recapping, Hannah had, Hannah got, Hannah gave, and finally Hannah left worshiping. And this is where it gets really crazy, because she gives up her son and she didn't go away, I am so upset, I hate you, God, how could you do this to me? What is your problem? Why would you even answer my prayer? You knew that it was a stupid vow. Like there are all these excuses that we would make. But she didn't end that way. She leaves worshiping. And at the end of verse 28, it says, and they worshiped the Lord there. And then chapter 2 picks up in 1 Samuel where it says there's this whole 11-verse prayer of worship that Hannah shares. And this is the thing she's praying. It says, then Hannah prayed in verse 1 of chapter 2, my heart rejoices in the Lord. The Lord has made me strong. She says, now I have an answer for my enemies. Get this. Do you hear what she's saying? You remember Peninnah, who was making fun of me? Oh, I got an answer for her now. And I'm going to rejoice because you know what? God came through. And something that Hannah could say that maybe Peninnah would never be able to say is that I had nothing. And I asked God and he gave me this thing, this boy. And so there's even this worshipful celebration going like, I didn't have anything, and God gave me this. And maybe you had plenty of kids, Peninnah, Nina. But I asked God, and he answered me. And she goes on and says, there is no one holy like the Lord. There is no one besides you. There is no rock like our God. And she goes on and on and on for 11 verses, 10 and a half verses, just worshiping God, that she had the privilege of giving her son to him for the rest of his life. And, you know, as we look at this story, we're like, oh, that's really cool for that Old Testament lady. I just want to warn you. Reckoning's coming for us too in a moment. Because we are supposed to have the same attitude that Hannah has had. And then the very last verse, verse 11 says, then Elkanah returned home to Ramah without Samuel. So just to be clear, she wasn't like, ha-ha, we'll tie a rope to him and say we're leaving him in there and then drag him under the curtain, the veil, like, skeet, skeet, you know, through the dirt and we'll take him home. No, they left him there, and it says, the boy served the Lord by assisting Levi the priest. And so she celebrated what God had given her and worshiped. So, recapping the story. Hannah had Hannah got, something. Hannah gave, everything. And Hannah left. Worshiping. Very good. And then there's a little bit of an epilogue, which is not in blue. But it's really cool because if you go to 2 Samuel chapter 2, there's this little, the last little moment mention of Hannah. In verse 18 it says, but Samuel, there was a story about Eli in between there, what's going on with Eli because he was not great and his kids were worse. It says, but Samuel, though he was only a boy, served the Lord. He wore a linen garment like that of a priest. So it's kind of like, I just imagine this like little boy in his little like priest costume and like, hi. But each year his mother made a small coat for him and brought it to him when she came with her husband for the sacrifice. So she saw him every year, once a year. At least she knew that that was happening. And he said before they would return home, she bought him a coat every year. You know, he's gotten bigger. Before they returned home, Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, notice he didn't say wives. I don't know what that meant, but maybe Peninnah wasn't there anymore. And say, may the Lord give you other children to take the place of this one she gave to the Lord. And it says, and the Lord blessed Hannah, and she conceived and gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. So Hannah had 6 kids in all. But notice, we know that you've read that part. We know that part. But she didn't go, I know if I give Samuel, God's going to give me more. Like, that is not biblical. This, like, you know, you trade God for this or that. We are supposed to give. We are supposed to give. We are supposed to surrender. We're supposed to be abandoned. And then whatever God chooses to give to us is a blessing. It's considered a gift. And so it's really cool. It says, meanwhile, Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. And then jumping down to verse 26, which is really cool. It says, and the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor with the Lord and with people. Now, that's the NIV. The first part is NLT. Has anyone ever heard that phrase before? And I'm not like going to put you on the spot. You can just raise your hand. But when Jesus was born, it said that he grew in stature in favor with God and with the people. And so, like, this Samuel, like, Jesus, I don't want to say Jesus was a model of Samuel. Samuel was probably a model of Jesus. But it's just really cool, the connection there. And what's also amazing is that if Hannah hadn't done this, this Samuel was considered the last judge. The judges ruled Israel until the kings, and Samuel anointed the first king of Israel. He was a guy named Saul. And so Samuel was the one in charge to say, God has appointed you, Saul. You need to follow him with your whole heart. Saul did not. And then Samuel was also the guy that was sent to Jesse's house and to Uncle Jesse's house with all the good old boys. They don't mean him no harm. All right, this is a Dukes of Hazzard. Anyway, but he goes to Jesse's house, and they're like, hey, bring out your boys, because I'm going to tell, one of them is going to be the next king. And the boys come out, and they're like, yeah, no, not him, not him, not him, not him, not him, not him, not him. And he's like, Jesse, dude, do you have any more sons? Because God hasn't chosen any of these. And he's like, well, yeah, there's the runt. He's out in the field. I guess I can bring him in. Hey, David, come on in. This guy wants to talk to you. And of course, Samuel says, God says to him, he is the one. Do not consider his outward appearance, for God considers the heart. Rise and anoint David as the next king of Israel. And so that was Samuel that did that, which is really cool. So just some tie-ins there to the story of this. But that is the story of Hannah and this gift that God gave her that was that if she had, you know, received it and just said, well, I guess this belongs to me now. Not only would she have broken her vow to God, obviously, it would have affected some of the other pieces. God would still be doing things through Samuel, but in a different way. But she said, no, this isn't for me to keep. I'm just a delivery person. Like, this is going back to God. This boy, Samuel, belongs to him because God gave it to me in the first place. And that's her story. So one more final time. Let's just summarize the story here with Hannah. Hannah had. Hannah got. Hannah gave,
everything.
And Hannah left.
Worthy.
Excellent. So let's talk about where it gets a little personal, because Hannah was awestruck by a life of surrender. And I think that order is on purpose. She didn't surrender and then go, I guess I better do this. Oh, okay, God gave me more kids. It was her going, God is incredible, and I cannot do anything better than offer all that I have to him. I can surrender. I can't do anything greater than surrendering my life to him. And again, we just sang that song, and I hope you thought about what we're singing. Consider it yours, Lord. Like, are we willing to do that? And again, just to make it personal, the problem is that one of the worst things, and Bill and I were just talking about this, today actually, one of the worst things you can get when you order something, is you click on the tracking information, you're like, it was supposed to be here. You know, by the way, it used to say, it will arrive by, and now it says, expected around. Do you ever notice that? I don't know if you've noticed that lately. It'll arrive by Tuesday, and now it says, expected around Tuesday. Like, oh, okay. You'll have, like, obnoxious people that would, like, write to them and say, it said it was arriving by Tuesday, and it didn't get here. And then you have to write back and forth, and they're like, okay, Mr. Fitch, fine, you can have another credit on your account. Oh, I mean, I don't do that. Okay. Why am I talking about this? Oh, but when you hit the tracking, you're like, where is my package? And you finally go back to the tracking information, and it says delivery incomplete. Like, where do you go with that? What does that mean? And then typically, if it's, you know, the Brazilian jungle shipping company that with the large river, that if you go, eventually it'll say, like, we're sorry this hasn't arrived in time. If it still hasn't arrived for another, like, 78 days, you can write back to us for a refund. Okay, thanks. But when you see that delivery incomplete, it's so discouraging. And I don't know about you guys, but it never seems to happen with something I don't care about. Like, they're not like, oh, you know, dishwasher soap, delivery incomplete. Oh, bummer. It's always like that one thing that I was really excited about, or the car part that you need so that you can, you know, pass inspection and go to college. Like, it's never anything you don't care about. But delivery incomplete is an awful thing to see, to read there. But unfortunately, I think that a lot of us live this way because God has given us everything. And instead of giving it back to him, instead of giving it where it goes, we just hold on to it. And I don't know if you guys, if you had heard this, it was like 4 or 5 years ago. I'm not even sure what company it was or what the delivery company was, but it was around Christmas time, and this driver just got so fed up with the pressure that he like backed his delivery truck up to a lake and just started tossing boxes in there. Did you guys hear about that in the news? It was, he just started emptying his truck into the lake because he was so tired of the pressure and the timing. And so maybe if you got a delivery incomplete, it's at the bottom of some lake somewhere. But yeah, we're the ones that do that. And there's two passages, if you're following along in your notes, there's two passages I want to use to set this up. The first is in Matthew chapter 25. And this is one of the parables of Jesus. And actually, this was taught during the parable series we did way back a long time ago, close to 14, 15 years ago. And starting in September through November, we are doing a new series called 15 Further. We're going to celebrate the last 15 years of what God has done and the next 15 years of where he's taken us. It is going to be incredible. We're going to have a lot of fun, so don't miss that. But anyway, 15 years or so ago, Justin taught this during the parable series. You can find that on our website. But this is often called the parable of the talents because it was a certain amount of money was called a talent. And in Matthew 25, verse 14, the story starts with, again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story, this is Jesus talking, by the story of a man going on a long trip. So this man is going on a long trip, and this is about the kingdom of heaven. So he's telling a parable that represents the kingdom. And he says, this man going away called together his servants, and it says, and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. He says he gave them his money. He says, look, here, this is what I'm going to give to each of you. It is my money, but I'm entrusting you to use it for me while I'm gone. And it was a metaphor, a parable of the fact that Jesus was going to leave this earth and has entrusted his things to us. We are called managers or stewards is the biblical term that is often used. And it means we're to use it for his glory. It's not our things. And in this story, he goes on and talks about the different people that, you know, one guy invested it and got more. Another guy invested it and got more. The third guy just buried it because he didn't want to do anything. And eventually he's called wicked and lazy. And at the very end of the parable, Jesus summarizes by saying this. He says, to those who use well what they are given, even more will be given. And they will have an abundance, but from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. And this was a parable. Jesus was saying, look, you people, I'm going to leave this earth. You as my followers, whether that's in 00 or 033 AD or 2026, the master is gone and he has entrusted us with his things. He hasn't entrusted us with our things. These are his things. He says, look, this is my stuff. It's your job to use it. It's your job to use it, not to keep it, not to run home and put it in your house, to deliver it. And he says, it is our responsibility to use well what we are given. And the side little note here, which isn't in my notes, is that God doesn't say, use what those other people have and you don't. God doesn't say, well, only if you have more because they do. God doesn't say, well, Hannah, sorry, you don't have kids, but Penananiah and Aya does. Like, it's whatever God has given you, we are to use. And so we often like to play that game, too, going like, well, if I had more, then I would give more. And we'll get to that in just a moment. So that's one thing, is that we are, that it is his money that is entrusted to us. Our things are his that he's entrusted for us to use. And then over in James says it this way. He says, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. So James says that every good and perfect thing that we have is from God, is a gift from God given to us. So it's not ours. It's His given to us. And He doesn't change. And so with that in mind, with the fact that the clothing that you have on your back, the money that you have in your bank account, the vehicle that you drive or currently don't drive because it's broken because your kids are going off to college, that apparently is a theme that I'm hearing, that if you're going off to college, your car is going to break. And it's happened at least in three families so far in the last couple of weeks. So just be ready. But whatever it is, God has entrusted that to us. And so the question I want to ask, that I need to ask myself too, is what are you keeping that you should be surrendering? What has God given you? What is the Samuel in your life that God has provided for you that you didn't deserve, you didn't earn it? But He says, look, this is for me. It's to be given back to me. It's to be used for me. And what are those things that you're keeping that you should be surrendering? Because it's all His. It's not yours. And you're like, well, I worked hard to get this money. Yeah, but how did you get that job? Oh, because of all the things I've done. How did you get that ability? Oh, because when I was, conceived, I pre-talked to my parents and said, look, can you make sure that I've got this ability to do this? And like, no, all of that is from God. And so the question is, what are you keeping that you should be surrendering? And so here's some things to consider. The first question is kind of the obvious one. Money. Has God given you money? Do you have money? And let me just say, you're in America. The answer is yes. Should you be surrendering that to God because you're holding on to it and you're storing it up? Over in Mark chapter 12, you're probably totally familiar with the story, even if you've never been to church. It says, Jesus sat down across from the place where people put their temple offerings. He watched the crowd putting their money into the offering boxes. Many rich people came and threw large amounts into them. But a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins. They were only worth a few pennies. And in like 10, when you guys tell this story to your children, you'll have to explain what pennies are. Because, in a generation, what are those penny things? And you'll be like, they're only worth one Bitcoin or something. But anyway, it wasn't worth very much at all. It was two pennies. You guys know what pennies are still, so we'll just leave it at that. And then it says, Jesus asked His disciples to come to Him. So there's these rich people going like, there's millions of dollars and thousands of dollars and tens of thousands of dollars and hundreds of dollars and more. Like, they're putting money in there. It's like, tink, tink. She drops in the two pennies. And Jesus is like, whoa, guys, come here, come here, come here, come here, come here. Brings the disciples over and says, look, hey, what I'm about to tell you is true. He says, this poor widow has put more into the offering box than all the others. And right there, they'd be like, okay, Jesus, you saw the millions of dollars, right? Like, she just went, tink, tink, tink. Like, that doesn't work that way, Jesus. I'll give you these two shiny coins instead of all those pieces of paper. Like, but He says, no, she put in all the others. She said, they gave a lot because they're rich, and they should be. They should be giving a lot with their money. He says, but she gave even though she is poor. And how often is that our excuse? Well, again, if I had more, I could give more. She put in everything she had. That was all she had to live on. And I think, people would be like, oh, that seems very wasteful. Why would you give that? Why would you give all you have to God? Because she recognized that it came from God and He's the one that provided it. And I'm just going to trust Him. And I'm reading a book and rereading the book Deep and Wide as I kind of get ready for the 15 Further series. And one of the things that they were talking about in this book was how one of the major what makes a follower of Jesus really a follower of Jesus is faith. It's not doing stuff. It's not showing up at church. Like, those are all important, but ultimately your growth is related to your faith. And this woman had tremendous faith, and Jesus recognized that. And so is there something that you're keeping? You're like, well, if I had more, then I could give more. When God says, no, you need to be surrendering because it's mine. You're supposed to use it. And we'll circle back around to that in a moment. The second question. So the first question, maybe it's money that they're keeping. You should be surrendering. The second thing is maybe it's your ability. Maybe it's ability. And we've talked about this before, and I kind of mentioned it already. Is in 1 Peter puts it this way. He says, God has given each of you a gift God has given. So if you're a follower of Jesus, you received a gift. You have spiritual gifts. We did a whole series called Gifts years ago. And even the fact that you're able to breathe, and this isn't on the screen, but the fact that you're able to breathe, God has given you that breath. The fact that you're able to walk, the fact that you're able to talk, all these things are gifts from God. And he says he's given you these gifts from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. And so the question is there an ability, is there a I don't want to say talent, like I'm going to start juggling for Jesus because I can juggle, but they can't juggle, I don't know. Like, is there something God has given you? Maybe it's your brains, maybe it's your brawn, maybe it's a talent, whatever it is. Your ability, all of it's been given to you by God. And Peter says we're supposed to use them well to serve one another. We are expected to use these things for others. And maybe there's something that you're holding on to that you're like, I don't want to use that. People might make fun of me or I don't know. We have all these excuses and reasons. But we're supposed to use our abilities for God's glory. Are you using them for God or just for your own benefit? So money, which by the way, we did a series called Offer where we talked all about giving back to God our money. Money, is it ability or are you maybe keeping? And Kendra actually mentioned this in her prayer as well. How about family? Are you holding on to family when you should be giving it up? I mean, quite literally, we saw that Hannah handed off her son. But I know, yesterday was the fourth of four MC3 weddings this summer. So Isaac and Kylie are now married, and they're off honeymooning somewhere. But I think that's right. I think there were four families from MC3 that got married. Angst, Fitch, Cooper, yeah, and Gensel. But one of the things, and I did two of those wedding ceremonies, one of the things I say every time is that, you know, and it came from the Bible, for this reason, a man leaves his mother and father and is united to his wife, and the two become one flesh. The whole idea is, as parents, our job is to push our kids, not push them out, but give them the tools so that they can grow, so they can become more like Jesus. And it's very easy, and I'm looking at you that have younger kids. It's easy to hold on and say, no, I need to keep these kids. I need to protect them. I need to keep them mine. I need to keep them nearby. And that is not what we are to do. We are supposed to give them. We are supposed to pack their bags for later. And you know, this fall we'll have the last one. We'll be empty nesters. Like, that's totally old people stuff. But that's what God has called us to do. And you know, even your own relationships, your husband and wife. Yes, we should love one another. Yes, we should love our spouses as, you know, husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church. But one of the things, again, I said yesterday, I say in all my wedding ceremonies, like, Jesus is number one. Your spouse should be number two. And if you misplace that order, things aren't working. And Jesus says it this way. We did a series called Drastic, which was a rough series to teach. And it was a rough series to hear. And this is why. Because in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus says, if you love your father or mother more than you love me, you are not worthy of being mine. He says, if you love your mom or dad more than you love me, then you're not actually a true follower of me. He says, or if you love your son or daughter more than me, you are not worthy of being mine. Jesus is very clear that it is our job to give these things away. He says, if you refuse to take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of being mine. If you cling to your life, you'll lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you will find it. And the whole idea is that our family cannot become our idol, essentially, is what it becomes. That we are more in love with our spouse or our children than we are with Jesus. And Jesus, you know, and I know we've said this to so many younger parents over the years, like, you need to surrender. You need to trust that God has your child in his hands, because he does. And your parenting is important, but you are not the one that keeps them alive. You are not the one, like, it's all God. And it's about pointing them to him and surrendering that. And so maybe it's family. And if you look at Genesis 22, that's the story of Abraham and Isaac. And obviously he was literally about to kill his son on an altar because God asked him to. And I don't think God's asking you to kill your children. I'm pretty sure that that is not the case. And he didn't ask Isaac eventually. So you have to read the Bible. You have to read that passage. But those are the, are you, is there something you're holding on to? And God says, no, this child was a gift to you, and now I want you to turn them back over to me. Like, don't try to hold on to them. Trust me with your children. And then finally, your property. And property is kind of everything else. And in Acts chapter 4, and we'll hear more about Acts and this concept next month. But in Acts chapter 4, it says, all the believers were united in heart and mind. And they felt that what they owned, their property, their stuff, their junk, their things, was not their own. So they shared everything that they had. It says the apostles testified powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. Like, they used their stuff for God's kingdom. They were able to say, you know what? This isn't mine. If you need it, you can use it. And let me just be straight. This is so hard, especially when we, you know, especially if you tie in the stewardship idea principle. And I know for me, like, I'm a guy that I take care of things. I read the manuals before I use them. Like, I know. But just a couple weeks ago, Chris asked if he could borrow my truck. And if you know anything about my truck, it's really old. It's actually considered an antique. It is old enough to be considered an antique. And I also, we saved up for a whole year to put a new transmission in it. And I washed it twice while I was on vacation, just because then waxed it, the whole deal. Like, just, you know. And Chris asked me to borrow my truck. And I remember my first thing was like, no way, buddy. No. I didn't say this, but that was my instinct. This is my thing. This is my truck. The money, the transmission, the paint job, the wax job. I don't use windshield wipers, because I don't like the smears. If it's really raining, I'll turn them on. But I have Rain-X on there, and if I'm like, eh, you know what? I think I can wing it with this. The rain will beat off, because I don't want to have those weird streaks, because it messes up the clarity of the windshield. Like, that's me. I know I'm messed up. And then so I'm thinking, wait. Whose truck is this? Is this mine? Like, or is it something that God has given me that I can use and I can allow someone to use? So if you need to borrow my truck, you're welcome to borrow my truck. It sucks in the snow. It's rear-wheel drive. It's meant for racing. So I actually will turn you down if you ask to drive it in the snow, because you need a good vehicle in the snow. But using your things, like, are we tied to our possessions and our property? And then over in Luke, there's this parable, and I'm not going to get into the whole parable. But the point is, Jesus says at the end of this parable, he says, here's the lesson. He says, use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then, when your possessions are gone, because the truck will rust, as it does and has, when your possessions are gone, then they will welcome you into an eternal home. And what Jesus was saying here is this: look, use all your stuff to draw people to Jesus. Use your things to draw people to me. Use your money to point people to me. Use your family to draw people to me. Use your home to bring people closer to me. Like, use all of it, because it's given to you as a gift. Your job is not to take the package home. Your job is to deliver it to where it belongs, and that is to God. And we are to use all of this stuff that he's given to us for the sake of his kingdom, for the sake of pointing people to Jesus. And so that's the question that you can barely read there. I realized I have a problem. I did it on purpose. But what are you keeping that you should be surrendering? I mean, Hannah's vow, I don't think any of us would have gone, you know what, Hannah, I think it's okay. You just keep that boy. But she was awestruck. She recognized that God was the one that gave him to her. She recognized that God was the one that provided all of her needs. And so she said, God, why can't I give you my son? What else do you want from me? I'll give it to you. I'm completely, totally abandoned to you, God. I'm surrendered to you. And that's what God has called us to as well. Because we're just the delivery person. The package, our job is to take it from God and frankly give it back to God, or use it for God's kingdom, not to hold on to it and take it to our house. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for all that you have given to us. And it's so easy, and especially when we get down in the weeds and the difficult problems and the broken down cars and the difficult family situations and that plumbing leak and whatever it is, God, it's easy for us to get lost in the fact that we have these things because of you, that we have food to eat, and sometimes we're not happy with what we ate, but we have food to eat. Thank you, God, for that. Thank you for the abilities that we have. For the ability to walk, talk, whatever it is that we've got. God, it's so much more than so many people in this world, and we are grateful for that. And God, I pray for all of us that we would remember Hannah's attitude, that we would be awestruck by you, recognizing that you have given us everything, and so we cannot do anything, but why not return it back to you? That we would surrender everything to you, God, that we wouldn't hold on to these packages, that we wouldn't be keeping something that we're supposed to be surrendering. So I pray that you would help each of us. This isn't everything at once. Maybe it is, but there's probably one thing, God, that you want us to change. And I pray that you would make it clear to us so that as we go through this, the rest of this day, the rest of this week, we would make the decision to surrender that one thing that perhaps we've been keeping that you want us to give up. Thank you that you are so worthy of it all. And that if we give it all up, you're still going to provide for us. If we put in the two pennies, you'll give us everything we need to live. You've promised us that. So we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.